Please be seated. Well, what a strange omission. Last week's second lesson from 2 Corinthians 12 ends halfway through verse 31. After asking a series of questions, a few of which are all prophets, do all speak in tongues? Do all interpret? All rhetorical questions which Paul expects us to answer with no. No, not all do. He says, but strive for the greater gifts. And there, as many of us used to say, endeth the lesson. Then this week's second lesson begins at 1 Corinthians 13:1. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, as we just heard. But unread, unproclaimed, anywhere in our lectionary, is one of the most important phrases in the New Testament. The second half of the last verse of chapter 12, immediately preceding what we read today. But strive for the greater gifts, and I will show you a still more excellent way. I will show you a still more excellent way. Talk about a missed segue. Wouldn't it be important for us to know that what Paul talks about in this famous chapter isn't just something that would show up on the back of wedding bulletins? As if he got tired about what he was writing about and just needed to write a love poem. Wouldn't it be important for us to know that he's talking about a way of life, a still more excellent way of life? Wouldn't it be important somehow to know that 1 Corinthians 13 is Paul's bullseye, if you will, something that gets right at the heart of what he means when he talks about the new humanity that God has envisioned, the very path that will need to be trod if Jew and Gentile, if Sikh and Christian, if men and women, queer and straight, conservative and liberal, are able to not merely find ways of tolerating each other, as we are wont to do, as we stay separated from each other in our silos, muttering about how our society is going to hell. All rhetorical questions that I think we'd say deserve to be answered with an unqualified yes. Paul has sought to help the Corinthians and us understand that each of us are indispensable parts of a spirituality that is so real, so interconnected, so vibrant and earthy, that the very best picture, the most emotionally and viscerally powerful image he can come up with is the human body. This is what we live in, so it's the most powerful image he could have come up with to get at what he's talking about. But we need more than a powerful image. We need a way, a more excellent way to live in our bodies with each other for the common good. For modern believers and those of us who are struggling with doubt and belief, the proof is in the pudding, isn't it? In a way of life that connects these ideals that are in our scriptures and in our liturgy, that connects that with the day-to-day realities of our lives. Sadly, without that phrase, and I will show you a more excellent way, we wouldn't know that Paul is trying to do just that. He wasn't merely trying to make Hallmark rich. So what is Paul talking about here? I was reading yesterday on the CNN website about Fatima Ali, one of the top young chefs in the United States who died yesterday of cancer at the age of 29. That's young. She said when she found out that she only had a year to live, she found extreme clarity. The one thing she would not have any space for was, maybe this is counterintuitive, the one thing she wouldn't have any room left for in her life was selfishness. The pressure of time helped her to see this more excellent way. The only thing that lasts. That's what Paul is talking about here. All of us have limited time, and yet under the illusion that we have limitless time, we can get our priorities screwed up. Without clarity, we can imagine that if people are impressed with our personalities, with our accomplishments as individuals, then we've arrived somewhere. Then we're somebody. Without clarity, we can imagine a small parish like ourselves. We can find ourselves trying to wow people with, well, it's, we really don't wow people in our parish because we just don't have the capacity to wow people. But let's imagine we could wow people. We can wow them with our music. That we know. Sermons, nah, not so much. And our extraordinarily good desserts. Yes, that's what it is. Most weeks, some weeks not, but yeah, come on. Most weeks we have this beautiful spread for our visitors and for parishioners. And you know, we might imagine that that's what it's about, that that's what we're trying to do is impress people. That's what the Corinthians thought. But Paul says, if we don't know how to actually truly greet and welcome others on their terms, that is, practice the kind of hospitality that we hope for ourselves, then it's all just a bunch of noise signifying precisely nothing. It's true, we need all of these things, particularly the music and the cakes. You know, Paul was under no illusion, I don't think, about himself. He knew he was a gifted communicator. And he believes, actually, that his central ideas, his knowledge of Christ, matter hugely. But this chapter gets at the heart of it. So what, really? So what, without a viable, transformative way to live, a path to walk, an excellent way to aspire to? This moment of clarity is love. And it's love of a particular kind. Of course, we use the word love in all sorts of ways, and here, despite its almost universal place in church weddings, what Paul is talking about is not love as attraction. Nor is Paul talking about love as preference. You know, I love dark chocolate with a hint of sea salt. That's very true. Neither is this type of love particularly practical. This is a love that really is, on one level, very weak. It doesn't fix a lot of problems. When I look at the challenges of our parish, we need not immediately think, we wouldn't immediately think of love as what we need. Right? We can probably think of 5 or 6 other more practical things that would fit that bill. At least I know council members probably can think of 5 or 6 things. So what's love got to do with it? How can love address the issues, both great and large in us, in our community and in our world? Well, love is not a quick fix. Perhaps you've noticed that there's a common theme, though, that runs through many of the descriptions Paul uses for this love. It's patient. It bears all things. It endures all things. It has this astounding persistence. Everything else is going to end. Not love, Paul says. Love will never end. Now, wait a second. You're thinking, the love in my marriage ended a long time ago. The patience I had for my job ran out years ago. What does Paul mean that love never ends? It has been noted that Paul is using what is called metonymy, in which a person is replaced with a quality they possess. If I say to you, the crown has decided, I mean the queen or the queen's representative has decided something. When Paul says, love is patient, love endures all things, love never ends, one could easily say, Christ is patient. Christ endures all things. Christ never ends. The persisting quality of this love is God's very love for the world and for us. And when we begin to revel in that, perhaps we are ready for the next step, believing that this type of love is for us to learn. Perhaps we're ready to believe that this love is actually quite practical, at least in the long term. We may begin to believe that really the one thing that will help the long arc of the universe bend towards justice is this love. And that all of our little efforts at it actually matter in the long run. Now here's the good news on a personal level. There's not one of us in this room, not one, that is a loving person in terms of this kind of love. There is not one person in this room that naturally lives this way with others. Even, maybe especially with those for whom we experience attractive love. Now, how on earth is that good news, you ask? Well, it kind of democratizes it, if you will. Because none of us do this naturally, all of us might yet do so with God's help. Love, you see, this kind of love, isn't for certain types of people. It's not for the naturally loving, for the stereotypical mothering types or caregiver types. This kind of love is the result of persisting in choices that we need to make every day. You see, it wasn't settled this morning whether any of us here in this room would act in this kind of loving way or not to the people around us. That was a choice that needed to be made. I had to make that choice this morning when somebody cut me off in the driving snow on my drive to St. Thomas. Would I let my reptilian self out of the bag? Would that driver see my spleen or not? This time I resisted, because I know you pray for me. But see, here's where the good news of Paul's message comes in. We really are members of Christ. And Christ really does persist in this type of love. We're in Him, and He's persisting in loving the world and each of us in this way. He has, by going all the way to the cross for us in love, begun to draw us into His forgiving and saving love. Even if we fail often, even if we feel that often our anxiety and our fear and our anger still gets the better of us. And so really, it is Christ that is the more excellent way. That is, and here's where the flip comes, the flip side of the coin. As Christ's body, as His body, we are the more excellent way. gulp. Together, practicing, learning this kind of love. And it's so interesting when we do this, even when we attempt it, people are willing to listen. People are willing to be influenced. Here's where the shoes come in. I almost tripped on myself there. In the 1960s, Presbyterian minister decided that he could best practice this more excellent way, not by being an evangelist, which was his training, but by starting a television show for children in which he would demonstrate, I think it's verse 4 in chapter 13, love as patient kindness. A show in which the goal wasn't just the learning, but the way the learning happened. As neighbors who are loved and are capable of loving. So in a month or so, we'll find out if the film Won't You Be My Neighbor, which documents the influence that Reverend Fred Rogers had on millions of children and adults worldwide, wins the Oscar for Best Movie. He wouldn't care one way or the other, because Oscars don't last. Fred Rogers didn't become a children's television host because of his desire to be famous, but because of his deep commitment to the one who had shown him this love and who had convinced him that it's what makes us most human. To be held in this love and to learn to live in it. That's what we receive in this sacrament. He gives his body in love so that we might be the body that loves. Amen.